She's got herself a universe gone quickly. For the call of thunder threatens
of Light, Madonna in der
Neopost-Dada-Surreal-Punk-Show
auf den berühmt-berüchtigten Sendern FSK in Hamburg 93,0 101,4 im Kabel.
Coloradio Dresden auf den Frequenzen 98,4 und 99,3 sowie
immer öfter in Österreich, in Graz, Radio Helsinki auf der Frequenz 92,6.
An den Mikrofonen.
Joran Resnikow.
Und KP Flügel.
Und warum haben wir Madonna gespielt? Wussten wir es oder spielen wir es nie? Oder war das zu poppig? Oder geht es eigentlich auch darum, jemanden einen Wunsch zu erfüllen?
Ja, vielleicht auch. Und vielleicht, das war so ein Vorgespräch von uns, führen wir trotzdem, auch wenn wir das ja nie wollen, vorher reden. Irgendwie geht es ja um die Frage, passt das in unsere Sendung? Und dann habe ich gemeint, ja eigentlich nicht. Müssen wir da was erklären? Natürlich müssen wir nichts erklären, aber, und
jetzt komme
ich
Auflösung.
Zum Eigentlichen, genau. Aber wir sind ja eine Punk-Show, also auch unter anderem bam, Punk-Show.
Und ich habe hier ein Buch von Jean Baudrillard, Cool Killer oder Der Aufstand der Zeichen. Und wir nehmen den Aufstand der Zeichen, das wissen auch bestimmte Behörden hier in Hamburg durchaus, ernst. Also Der Aufstand der Zeichen, Cool Killer, Baudrillard. Das Buch wurde eines meiner Lieblingslektüren 77, glaube ich, im Merve-Verlag veröffentlicht. Und da ging es um, zusammengefasst, um die Frage, was war denn in den 70er, in den früh 70er Jahren in New York los? Und ich mache ein paar Sätze und dann wird das, glaube ich, klar. Seit dem Zitat Baudrillard immer zitieren, richtig zitieren, weil es gibt bestimmte Medien, da wird das nicht so ernst und wahrgenommen. Aber in der Neopost Dada Surreal Punk Show werden diese Verpflichtungen erfüllt.
Seit
dem Frühjahr ist eine Woge von Graffiti über New York hinweggerollt, die von den Wänden und Zäunen der Ghettos herkommt, sich zuletzt auch der U-Bahn und Busse, der Lastwagen und Aufzüge, der Flure und Monumenten bemächtigt hat, um sie über und über mit rudimentären oder verdrehten Graphismen zu bedecken, deren Inhalt, und das ist ein wichtiges, in seinem Umfang neues Charakteristikum weder politisch noch pornografisch ist. Es sind bloß Namen, oft aus Underground-Comics bezogene Spitznamen. Duke Spirit, Supercool, Cool Killer, Ace, Viper, Spider, Eddie, Cooler und so weiter. Gefolgt von Straßennummern. Und einen hat Baudrillard, dieser Schlingel, der denkt, er wäre ein Strukturalist, vergessen.
Nein, ich glaube nicht. Er konnte ihn da, glaube ich, noch nicht aufführen, weil es ist einer, der ganz klein schon mitgemacht hat. Nämlich mit 10 Jahren hat er angefangen. Das heißt, 49 geboren, um es gleich genau zu sagen, 1949, hat er angefangen, 1969, jetzt bin ich irgendwie zurückgerutscht in eine andere Zeit, eben 1969, das heißt, er hat begonnen 1979, 2 Jahre nach dem Erscheinen von Cool Killer, aber sozusagen zu dieser legendären Urbewegung der Graffiti-Kunst durchaus dazugehörend.
Es geht natürlich um Cope 2.
Natürlich.
Natürlich.
Legend by Nature.
Genau, du hast ja auch ein T-Shirt an.
Oh, jetzt ist muss so ich mal meinen Pulli ausziehen, ja. Hier ist nämlich die Heizung gerade erst angestellt worden.
Ja,
und das ist ganz toll, ich liebe es. Es ist wirklich sehr empfehlenswert, tolle Baumwolle und richtig schöner Druck. Und da steht allerdings Cope und uns fiel gerade auf, dass wir nicht gefragt haben, warum er jetzt sich Cope 2 nennt. Aber vielleicht, weil er jetzt der erwachsene Cope ist.
Ich war mir aber gar nicht sicher, vielleicht kommt das sogar noch.
Gut.
Doch, er erzählt das weiß ich. Ich habe es geschnitten, das Interview, und er löst es auf.
Dann weißt du mehr.
Ich
wunderbar,
weiß es mehr.
Dann freue ich mich jetzt auf die Auflösung.
Und Cope 2? Ist zurzeit gerade auch noch zu sehen in der Hamburger Galerie in der ABC-Straße. Ich glaube, heute läuft das noch, 13.11. hier in Hamburg, ABC-Straße in der Hamburger Galerie. Da haben wir Cope 2 vor einer Woche getroffen und vorgestern haben wir mit der Galeristin
Greta Verhülstock gesprochen. Lange gesprochen. Es war ein ganz, ganz spannendes und begeisterndes Gespräch.
Spannend und begeistert, das hört sich immer so spannend und begeistert an, aber durchaus auch ein nachdenkliches Gespräch über Kunst, Street Art, Galeriekultur, auch in ökonomischer Hinsicht, Kunst, Kunstmarkt und so weiter. Also es wird eine spannende Neopostada-Show, habe ich so im Gefühl. Ich hätte beinahe gesagt, habe ich so im Blut, aber das hört sich hier ein bisschen makaber an.
Oh, und das bevor auf FSK, mein Lieber.
Aber vielleicht gehen wir gleich ins Interview rein.
Ja, ich glaube, das ist eine ganz gute Idee. Vielleicht ein bisschen Musik zwischendrin nochmal, weil wir sind ja eigentlich eine Musiksendung und dann gehen wir direkt ins Interview, oder?
Aber hört.
This is so crazy. So stupid,
Hello, Cope.
Okay, let's go.
Let's go. This is Syrinda.
Hello.
Hi.
And my name is Klaus Peter.
Cool.
You are from New York?
Yeah.
Here in Hamburg?
Yeah.
For an exhibition?
Mm-hmm.
And when did you started making graffiti in New York?
1978, 79, when I was about 10 years old, 10, 11 years old.
10 years?
Yeah, I was watching the subway cars in New York City when they had like graffiti everywhere. So I would take a marker from my dad or my cousins, and I would just start to write on everything because I wanted to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that's how it all started.
What do you wanted to express? What was the mood? The
it was just, I mean, you know, we lived in the South Bronx, you know. We lived in a really poor neighborhood. We was poor, come from a poor family, where there was a lot of abandoned buildings, burned cars everywhere. So that's where we played, you know. We played in abandoned buildings and abandoned cars. And we would take the subway car just to have fun, you know. It'd be like 4 or 5 of us. And we would just go on the train and take it for a ride and come back. That was fun for us. And, you know, just doing that was, you know, just a normal thing to us as kids. And doing graffiti gave me kind of an outlet to express myself and to show somebody that, you know, I have some type of talent in some way. I'm not just some poor little dirty Spanish kid from the ghetto who just, you know, stays in the neighborhood and just plays all day in a bad, you know, condition of a neighborhood. You know,
so you wanted to become famous?
Yeah, it started.
Fame?
Well, you wanted to be famous on the train. That's how it really starts. You want to be famous on the train. You want people to know your name on the train. And then there's a thing called to become a king of a subway car. That's what it was back in those days. So I was out to become king of a subway car. A king is the rider who has the most, his name up the most on that subway line, more than any other graffiti artist. So I was out to do that, and I was successful in doing it in several lines, like the four line, the two, the five, the D, and so on. And before you know it, you started to meet people as you got older, and they're like, oh, you're Coke too. Oh, I seen your name on the train. So you felt like a movie star, even though you wasn't. You was just a normal kid from the street, but it made you feel important, you know? And it was a good thing, and you only just, you said to yourself, you know, why not I get better and take it to another level? And before you know it, as I got older, I started to do it on paintings.
Why this name? Where did it come from?
Coke came from a friend of mine, my best friend. When we was kids, he used to write Coke with a K. Mm-hmm. And I was writing another name, and he told me, why don't you write Coke with the C, and I write Coke with the K. Because we was two little bad kids, and we used to go in all the stores, steal all the candy, steal toys, steal everything. Spray paint, you know, we would just steal. We were bad kids, you know. We didn't get money from our moms and dads. The money they had, they worked hard for, was to pay bills and buy food. So, and at the time, there was a movie Star Wars came out in 1977, I think. And we started to steal the little Star Wars toys. We would steal them. We would go to, like, Toys R Us, and we would put, like, five of them in our pockets, maybe 10, to get the whole collection because our mother wouldn't pay for Star Wars figures, you know. So at the same time, we was tagging on trains also, and we was breakdancing. We were B-boys. And then I just took the number two and I added on to Coke. So I became Coke 2. So back in 1985, my friend, my best friend, Daryl, he went to the Marines. And it's funny because he got stationed out somewhere in Germany. And he met a German woman. And because we was getting in trouble so much, his mother wanted him. She said, you have to go to the army or something because you're just not going to school, you're getting in trouble, go to the army. Like, just do something with your life, you know. And I was going to go to the army as well because in 1985, I had my first child with a girl from the neighborhood. I had, like, three girlfriends. I'm a young, horny kid. I'm having sex with all these little girls in the neighborhood. So, boom, I had a kid in 1985. I was a young father. So I was kind of worried, like, oh, my God, I have a kid, you know. I'm only 16. I have a kid. It's
so
crazy.
You woke up a little bit and
so I said, now I have to work and be a man. But I was still a kid myself. 16, you're still a kid yourself. So I just started working two jobs, and my friend went to the Marines. I didn't want to go to the Army. I just didn't want to be a soldier. And, you know, I was like, I don't want to go to the Army. But my mother was like, maybe you should go. It might be good for you. But I never did, you know. So my boy, he just made it a career. And he lived and stood out here and lived in Germany. Mm-hmm. Ever in 1985, he never came back. After the Marines, he retired. I think he went for like 10, 15 years, retired. And he lived in Germany. He married a German woman. And he has two beautiful daughters. It's so crazy. And he sees my success doing art shows all around the world. And he doesn't believe it. He's just like, this is crazy. Like, it's unbelievable.
And some that you are now painting or spraying pictures like these pictures which we can see here?
The paintings? It's the paintings? Just, I take my energy of what I've been doing for 35 years and I just put it on a painting now. Because, you know, I'm older now, I'm 48, you know, I don't paint illegal like that. It's a different lifestyle now, a different time in life. You can't go out and I'm too old to be doing anything illegal. So, you know, watching other artists like before me that I idolize, like Jean-Michel Basquiat, Keith Haring, you know, Crashing Days, Futura 2000, Scene. These are big artists that I always idolized, and they were doing paintings already before me.
Yeah.
So they kind of influenced me to take my art and just put it on a painting. And it started to do well. You know, I started to make paintings, and before you know it, I had galleries contacting me and, you know, people, collectors contacting me and saying they're really interested in my work in the sense that it's some of New York history of graffiti, and they like that. You know, it's I've been doing it for 35 years, so when I do a painting, that's what I bring to the world and to the art world is, you know, maybe you might look at it, it might look like a mess or scribble, whatever, but it's a painting to me, you know. I'm an artist now. It's like I'm a graffiti artist, always was. I'm a graffiti purist, you know. That's what made me who I am today, you know. I can never forget it, you know. But in the end of the day, now, I'm just a painter. I just love to do paintings.
And how did you find the turn out from your difficult situation?
It was pretty simple, you know. I mean, I just started playing around with the paint, with the canvases, and showing them to some other artists that don't do graffiti. They are just real, like, contemporary artists. And they would say, that looks great. Just keep doing it. Do what you feel. That's what being a real artist is.
Yeah.
Don't do something that someone else tells you to do. Don't be like, you know, just do what you feel, what comes out of your heart, your soul, and what you love to do. That's what a real artist is in any kind of art, whether it be singing, acting, you know. If you're an artist, you're an artist, and you should always do what makes you feel, you know, original and authentic. And this is what it is, and this is what I love to do.
So you always kept the style of bubbles?
Yes,
the
yes.
The origin of your
exactly.
Style.
It's what we did on the trains.
Yeah.
If you look at some of my old pictures from the early 1980s, you can see some of that, you know, on there, and I still do it in the sense that it's, I just try to stay original and authentic in my style, but I just add a little more to it with the paint brushes and the paint strokes because I like doing that. It gives it more of a touch, and it looks cool when you combine both kind of styles, you know, and watching Basquiat paint, like, I seen how he was just natural and he would just paint, you know, and do what he loved to do. So I said, you know, I want to still do my graffiti, but I want to mix and put something more to it. So that's when I started to put the paint and roller and paintbrush, and it started to look crazy.
Yeah.
And before you know it, it's like people were like, this is great. You know, I've had like 3 shows in Paris. All sold out shows, amazing shows. I have another one, 2 of them next year, one in South France and one in Paris.
Where in South France?
Marseille.
Mm-hmm. Marseille.
Yeah. And I have one in Paris as well. And I have one in January and beginning of the year, I have one in Dubai. This gallery from Dubai contacted me and I was kind of surprised because Dubai is like so far and it's like another world.
Yeah.
But they love this. They was like, it's new to them, but they love it. Like, they like it in the sense that, you know, I have history and that's important to people.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a collector or someone who wants to spend 10,000 euros or 15,000 euros on a painting, they want to say, okay, who is he? Like, where is he from? Like, I could have started doing this yesterday.
Yeah.
You know? But you have to, it's good in the sense that I have some type of history as a New York City graffiti art legend, is what they call me a lot, you know. People have called me that for many years. And it's good when they can hear that and say, oh, okay, you know, you started in the subways in the early 80s, and a lot of people know how graffiti was in the New York subways in the early 80s.
It was a dangerous thing, I think.
I lived that, and that's kind of what all these paintings are. It's like, it's raw, it's powerful and colorful at the same time, and very strong. And that's the kind of life I lived coming from the ghetto of the Bronx.
Yeah.
Change in New York. I knew a musician, James Chance, He did the No Wave thing, jazz and punk. Mm. And he told me last year that there's a great change in New York. Now it's clean.
Oh, yeah, now it's disco, a different level. Yeah,
the CBGB is a boutique of fashion.
Yeah, it's different now. It's changed big time. It's very clean. Like, you know, the ghetto areas are still a little crazy. You know, you still got people selling drugs. People, you know, you get that everywhere, all over the world, you know. But New York has changed a lot, extremely, like, so clean, it's unbelievable. Like, sometimes I can't believe how I've watched it change. I've watched it, you know, transition into a better city. So it definitely has, you know, changed, especially me as well. Like, I've changed the same as New York changed. You know, I come from playing in abandoned buildings, riding on trains. So I used to sell drugs as well as a kid because I had to support my kids because working in a regular job, I wasn't making enough money. So I had to sometimes sell drugs as well, which was another side of my life besides graffiti. Mm-hmm. And I was getting in trouble too many times to a sense where, you know, the judge was like, if you get arrested again, you're going to go to jail for a long time. So I was like, you know what, I'm done with this shit. I can't, I'm just too old and I have to figure something out. And that's when I said, I need to start doing paintings.
And you're happy now that you can live from your art?
Oh yeah, man, it's like it's phenomenal. It's to me, it's definitely a God blessing, man. I mean, God has blessed me in a way that, because I've lived a really rough life, and to be here now, doing this art show, doing an interview with you, it's phenomenal, and I'm very happy, and I'm thankful to God, the world, everything, you know, everyone who supported me growing up, you know, through my bad times and good times. Sometimes I can't even believe it.
Yeah.
You know, I sit and I smoke a cigar and I'm like, holy shit. It's like, no, seriously, it's like I was in Moscow for a week before here.
Yeah.
I was over there for a week and I went to do two graffiti shops, like hip-hop shops. They flew me in to come and do autographs. And the amount of kids that were there was unbelievable. I mean, hundreds. I was kind of shocked. Like, I didn't even know I had such a big fan base in Russia. You know, it was like these kids were going insane for me. It was like, I've been to Mexico and I've seen a huge crowd of kids. But in Russia, Moscow, it was really crazy. I was just like, wow, this is a lot of kids here. It's like unbelievable. It was like, I was like a rock star, you know? And the two stores flew me in and I did a project with them, a t-shirt and of some old Russian car from the 1930s or something. And from there, I came here for this. And after this, I go back home. I take it easy for the rest of November, December. And then January is Dubai. And then February is Australia. And then I got a whole line of art shows to like 2016. Like, I had so much they wanted to do for like, I had about six or seven for 2015, but it's too much. It's too much. And I can't like produce so much work, you know. So what I did was I pushed some of the shows into 2016. So it's kind of amazing that you can have actually shows booked for 2 years, you know, four gallery shows a year. It's a lot. It's a lot because you have to make the paintings, you have to travel. It's so like, and that's not even including the galleries. It's not even including the private collectors who contact you and want to come to your studio and look at your paintings and want to buy something like from you. You know, I get that a lot now too. So it's like extra work on the side. So it's like, I'm very like blessed and very happy and. You know, it's crazy. Maybe my mother's blessing me from heaven. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, her death hurt me really bad because she struggled for many years with drug addiction. And, She couldn't make it. She got very sick and she passed away 10 years ago. This year, December 4th, makes 10 years. So, you know, it's very hard, and my mother was a great mother. It's hard when you lose your mother or father, any parent, you know, because they're the ones. My mother always supported me. She knew I painted trains, and she would be like, be careful, you shouldn't do that. She even used to tell me I should do paintings, you know, and I was like, I don't want to do paintings. I didn't know much about it.
She encouraged you?
Yeah, she kind of encouraged me as well, my mother, because she's like, you're always getting arrested, you know, you don't want to be selling drugs for the rest of your life. Why don't you do graffiti on canvas? Like, be like Picasso, and he's big, and I was laughing. I was like, that could never happen, you know, it's like, you know, because back in the days when we was a kid, everybody would talk about, you know, you got Picasso, Andy Warhol. That was all like the 70s. I mean, Picasso was way before, but his name, I remember always people talking about it, you know. And Jackson Pollock. These were the guys people always talk about. And I always used to hear it, you know. And I'm like, who are these guys? Like, but when you start to do this, you start to learn. And you start to know, like, these are who these people are. And it's really, really amazing.
We're living in a lonely world.
last question for you?
Yeah, perhaps. If I think of your beginnings, your art came out of danger and of the need to do something, you told to us. Now, today, how do you find your inspiration for what you are doing now? Because you are like a living legend, but it can be a danger to be so. You understand my question?
What gives me the inspiration today is what you
to stay new and to stay yourself and not just to be a legend.
I don't honestly, I think I'm just naturally, I'm a naturalist, like I'm just it's a natural thing to me, I think. So either, you know, whether I'm, you know, I'm never trying to stay relevant. I just do it because it's something that I just normally do. I'm just an artist. Like, I can be in my studio and I work on 4 or 5 paintings at the same time. It just comes out naturally. And I'm always inspired by other artists as well. That's one thing. Like, I go to museums, I go to other galleries, and I look at other artists. You know, they have nothing to do with graffiti. I look at all kind of art, and it's amazing.
What do you like?
Man, it's Jeff Koons.
Yeah.
You know, even though a lot of these artists don't do that, some of them don't even do the art anymore. They have people doing it for them. You know, and there's another guy, a German. He's a German artist. He's really amazing. I love his work. His name is Gerard. What's his name? Richard, I think maybe. He's a. Let me see. I think I could find it.
Okay.
He has a weird name. It's hard for me to pronounce it. But
Richter.
Huh?
Richter.
Yeah, there you go. The little old guy.
He's from Hamburg.
He's a fucking amazing. I love this guy's work. I love his work. It's like I watch video of him on TV, and I was like, wow, I gotta go to one of his art shows. But I've seen some of his work in London at the what museum was that in London? I was there this summer, and he had some pieces there, and to see them up front is like amazing. He really huge paintings, and just any kind of art. I mean, from Basquiat, I went to a retrospect he had in Paris 2 years ago. That was like mind-blowing to see those paintings, huge, like, you know, even Keith Haring, you know, to see some of his shows in museums today, it's really amazing. And I just walk into a museum of contemporary art in any city I am, and I just look at other work, you know, anyone's artwork, you know, and just to get inspired and look at it and feel their energy and like, wow, makes me want to run back to the studio and make paintings. So I'm inspired really from any artist, not just graffiti. It can be just anything. Any artist that's just great.
Yeah.
The real last question, which kind of music you like?
I like everything, man. I like jazz. You know, when I'm in the studio, I like playing jazz. You know, I love Madonna. I love Madonna. You know, all kind of music. I mean, I'll listen to everything, you know, really much. I'm not into rap no more like they used to. I'm not really into that. It's all right. But I like the old rap, the new rap. It's just terrible. So, but I like U2. I like Police. You know, so much, pretty much anything. Sarah McLachlan. All kind of music, you know, from rock, Fleetwood Mac. I love Fleetwood Mac. You know, it's just so much music, you know, and Stevie Nicks. I love Stevie Nicks. She's just one of my favorites. And it's just, you know, all kind, you know. Michael Jackson. I could go on and go on and Jimi Hendrix. Just everything, you know, pretty much all kind of music. I'm not just those artists that just like one music. I like all kind of music.
Thank you.
I'm pretty open to everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. so thank we you. Know what kind of music we can.
Das war Madonna und natürlich auf Wunsch, was heißt Wunsch? Doch, er hat es ja auch genannt, Cope 2 mag auch Madonna. Und da dachte ich doch, dann bringe ich in die Neopostadas Hörpunk-Show auf den Sendern.
FSK, den Frequenzen 93,0 und 101,4 im Kabel.
Kohler Radio Dresden, den Frequenzen 98,4 und 99,3 und?
Radio Helsinki in Graz 92,6. Das heißt, du wolltest sagen,
genau,
dass
das war die Parenthese, die Frequenzen.
Die etwas lange gedauert
natürlich
hat.
Bringe ich dann natürlich die Madonna-CD, die sich in Anführungsstrichen in meinem Archiv befindet, einfach mal mit. War ja auch eine Gelegenheit, mal wieder so zu gucken. Zwischendurch haben wir dann noch was vom Produzenten dieser CD gehört, von Merveux oder Merveux. Und vielleicht da Cope 2 ja auch gesagt hat, dass er Jazz mag, könnte ich mir vorstellen, dass wir jetzt den Sprung von Madonna über Street Art Graffiti Baudrillard, den Mauern der Bronx, zu John Coltrane wagen.
Ja, das können wir machen, aber wir können zwischendrin vielleicht auch ganz kurz nochmal natürlich nicht ein Fazit ziehen, weil ich glaube, dieses Interview mit Cope 2 spricht für sich, aber trotzdem vielleicht auch nochmal kurz reflektieren, denn wir haben uns ja mit Street Art schon seit Jahren immer wieder in sehr, sehr unterschiedlichen Formen und Ausprägungen beschäftigt. Und mich persönlich, kann ja gleich mal sagen, wie ich das so empfunden habe oder jetzt beim Nachhören oder nochmal hören, wieder empfinde, mir hat diese völlig unideologische, direkte, er sagt ja selber, naturalistische Art, was auch immer das heißen mag, in diesem Zusammenhang sehr, sehr gut gefallen. Das hat mich sehr beeindruckt, weil normalerweise steht Street Art oder auch jetzt im engeren Sinne Graffiti gerade ja immer in so einem ideologischen, politischen Zusammenhang oder wird dann auch von außen, von denen, die es nicht selber machen, instrumentalisiert für ihre eigenen unbefriedigten Bedürfnisse. Vielleicht auch, ich will jetzt niemanden anschwärzen, nur das so ein bisschen provokativ in den Raum stellen. Und dieses direkte sich einfach freuen an dem, was er macht. Natürlich, damals war es eine Frage des Überlebens, das hat er erzählt, brauche ich nicht nochmal zu wiederholen. Aber jetzt das so auszuleben mit einer Wahnsinnsfreude, er saß da auf dem Sofa und immer wieder gesagt, ich kann es gar nicht glauben, dass ich jetzt hier sitze und dass das so klappt und dass mein Leben so gelaufen wie es ist, wie es ist. Ich bin so wahnsinnig dankbar. Also es hat mich unglaublich beeindruckt.
Na, ich habe ja mal auf den Satz geprägt, die Realität ist nicht die Theorie. Natürlich in der Realität gibt es auch immer viel Theorie, aber wenn ich jetzt mir nochmal dieses Büchlein, es ist fast zerlesen, Jean Baudrillard, Cool Killer oder Der Aufstand der Zeichen, erschienen im Merve Verlag Berlin, nochmal so angucke, dann würde ich auch sagen, dass die Beschreibung des Treffens mit Cope 2, ich das auch so empfunden habe und dass mir da vielleicht auch nochmal bewusst geworden ist, dass die Theorie, also Baudrillard in Ehren, allein für sich genommen eigentlich gar keine Sprengkraft mehr hat und ich eigentlich allen nur Theoretikern was heißt empfehlen? Steht es mir an, den nur Theoretikern etwas zu empfehlen? Aber ich finde so die Verbindung des Theoretischen mit dem Praktischen und das sich einlassen auch auf so persönliche Begegnungen vielleicht viel wichtiger ist, als jetzt nur im stillen Kämmerlein Theoriesätze, theoretischster Art zu formulieren, die vielleicht auch als Sätze durchaus brillant sein können. Aber der Aufstand der Zeichen, ja, wo ist, wenn man jetzt die These von Baudrillard oder den Subtitle von Baudrillard aufgreifen würde, der Aufstand der Zeichen zeichnet sich dadurch aus, dass halt eben am Beispiel von Cope 2 jemand sich erstmal darüber gefreut hat, dass er aus der Bronx, aus den sehr prägnant prekären, das Wort prekär ist fast schon zu elegant, aus diesen beschissenen Verhältnissen, die damals in der Bronx waren, dass er sozusagen die auch hat überwinden können, für sich persönlich.
Ja, sicherlich. Was ich interessant finde in dem Zusammenhang ist allerdings, dass ich mittlerweile es bewegender finde oder sinnvoller finde, das, was an Theorie, Literatur, vor allem natürlich um Baudrillard oder auf Grundlage von Baudrillard, einer der ersten Texte, so zu Street Art gilt vielleicht für andere Kunstrichtungen und Zusammenhängen auch, entstanden ist, als so eine Kunstrichtung für sich zu nehmen. Also das ist so für mich manchmal so eine Parallelwelt, die entsteht, die mehr oder weniger Berührungspunkte hat mit der künstlerischen Praxis, in dem Falle Street, also mit den Graffiti-Sprayern selber, aber die für sich sowas Eigenes entwickelt. Also das finde ich eigentlich auch spannend. Und in dem Zusammenhang würde ich ganz gerne noch auf einen Text hinweisen, den ich entdeckt habe in der Auseinandersetzung mit dem künstlerischen Oeuvre von Oz. Wir haben ja ein Buch darüber verfasst und zwar ist es ein Text, der auch aus der allerersten Zeit, also aus den Ursprüngen des Graffiti existiert, jetzt habe ich gerade das Wort suchen müssen, also das, der damals geschrieben ist, worden ist, nämlich 1974. Es ist ein Text von tatsächlich, gut hinhören, Norman Mailer, den bringt man ja weniger damit in Zusammenhang. Der hat ein Buch gemacht zusammen mit dem Fotografen John Narr damals, der also die allerersten Zeichen, die ihren Aufstand in New York gemacht haben, auf den Suburbans und so weiter, fotografiert, dokumentiert. Und Norman Mailer hat eine, ja, ich würde fast sagen, ja, so eine Mischung aus philosophischer Überlegung, kunsthistorisch, ethnologisch fast, zu dem Ursprung dieser Zeichen, dieser Bewegung gemacht. Und das heißt The Faith of Graffiti, 1974 entstanden, sehr lesenswert nach wie vor. Was ich da spannend finde, um jetzt nochmal den Bogen zu Cope 2 zu schlagen, ist, dass Cope 2 würde so gar nicht sprechen, aber dass im Grunde so ein Punkt, den Norman Mailer in diesem Text sehr hervorruft, da sehr deutlich nochmal spürbar geworden ist, für mich jedenfalls, nämlich, dass dieses Schreiben seines eigenen Namens, ob das der wirkliche ist, ein Spitzname oder der, ein erfundener Name ist, der aber immer in dieser Form und dann auch in der Grafik wiederholt wird, so ein nicht nur Zeichen setzen ist, sondern so ein Akt des Überlebens darstellt, tatsächlich, nicht nur symbolisch, sondern tatsächlich. Nämlich, ich schreibe meinen Namen, es ist fast ein biblischer Akt, die Kraft, die im Wort steckt, ein Wort, welches ich dann an die Mauern der Wand spraye in einer bestimmten Form, und ich schreibe meinen Namen, ich heiße, ich sage, und also existiere ich in dieser Form. Das fand ich in dem Text sehr spannend, und Cope 2 in einer völlig anderen Weise sagt das ja eigentlich auch.